I'm a chicken fried.
Last night, on President Trump's orders, U.S. Central Command conducted a precision strike in the middle of the night against three nuclear facilities in Iran.
At midnight Friday into Saturday morning, a large B-2 strike package comprised of bombers launched from the continental United States. As part of a plan to maintain tactical surprise, part of the package proceeded to the west and into the Pacific as a decoy, a deception effort known only to an extremely small number of planners and key leaders here in Washington and in Tampa. The main strike package, comprised of seven B-2 Spirit bombers, each with two crew members, proceeded quietly to the east with minimal communications.
Got me. I mean, I was, we're repositioning assets to Guam for some future thing over the next couple of weeks, as President Trump says he's going to make a decision. In the, what happened? You got me. And I think the whole world, which was kind of the point. Joining us now, we have Congressman Jimmy Patronis, our congressman from Northwest Florida District 1. Jimmy, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning. Did you find yourself surprised at this announcement?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm turning on TVs on this past weekend, and in the middle of whatever we're watching, Brett Baer breaks the news. So it's obvious, you know, when he pops up in the middle of the screen in the middle of the night, something's happened. What's interesting is something of this magnitude didn't get leaked in any way, shape, or form. So that just tells you how close to the vest President Trump and his team kept this. I mean, even those with inside the Pentagon and the degree of separation, no leakage whatsoever. And I understand that the members of Congress weren't briefed until after the bombs were dropped and were en route of leaving airspace. But I'm sure that was all really an abundance of caution to protect our airmen.
Yeah, I think the very best way that you keep a massively complicated international military operation like flying B-2s from Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri west to Guam as a decoy and then east to Tehran as an actual strike and a submarine and hypersonics and. I think the best way you keep that secret is you just don't tell Congress. That seems like the best plan to me.
Sure. Well, and so, and to your exact point, the speaker will do an all conference call with us where it'll be all the members, Republican members, and we will have a call. And on that call, he'll say, look, first, full disclosure, if you're a member of the press, you're not supposed to be on this call. You know better. Please hang up. And members of Congress, don't chat about it. I mean, in the middle of these calls of walking through the big, beautiful bill and the changes we're going to make, you know, Jake Sherman from Punch Bowls is live tweeting. So our own members are sharing stuff so they can, you know, have access to the media in ways that, you know, feeds their own ego. It's sad, you know, that sometimes in order to make things happen effectively, you've got to keep a secret.
I'm frankly always a bit amazed at the level of information restraint that is kept by, for example, members of the intelligence committees. And I know it may not always be, but, you know, they usually get it, you know, and they don't stay long in those committees if they don't get it, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, and you need to have that type of punitive action. But, you know, there's around the Capitol, there's SCIFs, there's these private briefing rooms. There's ways. And look, and those members that really want to be on the intelligence committee, they get it. They have got to make a commitment to our country that this oversight that they're going to have over this sensitive information is something that they understand could affect the lives of our soldiers around the world.
You know, one thing, obviously, Northwest Florida, right? You know, naval training, aviation training. We've got, you know, First Sow Special Operations out of Hurlburt. They haven't said yet whether First Sow was involved in this or not, but, you know, typically the rule is if it happens, they were involved. you know, you and Eglin, of course, are all part of your congressional district. Military things matter a lot to you. Just, you know, wondered if you had any thoughts about the justification, whether it's constitutional, as of course some Democrats are claiming that it is not. I believe that it is fully within the president's, power. But your thoughts on the action itself, justification, build up to it, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, I think there was eight different times during the Obama administration where he had similar action, dropping bombs without congressional approval. So, I mean, this is, look, these are all the crazies that have Trump derangement syndrome. They're going to try to do everything they can to try to keep this president from keeping us safe. At the end of the day, I think that Trump made it loud and clear. President Trump made it loud and clear for several weeks. Iran cannot have a nuke. This is what, and I mean, this is, and again, this is why they went at 2:30 in the morning. This is why Iran was given a heads up before these bombs were dropped. You know, get your people out of there because these places are about to disappear. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, J.D. Vance said it well. He said, you know, if they want to have nuclear for power, just like other countries do, we're fine with that. But when you're trying to refine it in order to make bombs, you know, and it's not just the United States isn't going to stand for it. I feel like this was an important part of Trump's whole pass to the Middle East a few weeks ago, was to talk to those world leaders in the Middle East, you know, make it loud and clear publicly that they are allies of the United States. What's important to you? Well, what's important to you is going to be important to me, and since we all agree on this same topic, no nukes in Iran.
You know, it's interesting. Two things about President Trump is, number one, people who can't stand him don't perceive this. But my opinion of him is that he hates war, really, really, really hates war. And he hates nuclear 100%. War more than anything. And so when you really hate war, you do everything you can to avoid it. And I think he's done everything he can to avoid it. And then this is this is the only way to avoid the really, really horrible thing. And then the other part is, you know, he's in his second term, and I think he's kind of doing the things now that he wishes he would have done in his first term, and he's making sure they get done.
100%. So in the legislature years ago, a friend of mine, God bless his soul, passed away. Matter of fact, he married a Pensacola girl. He told me, Jimmy, you got to show the process that you can take a hit. But then also, you got to show the process you can deliver a hit. And this is exactly what President Trump did. He kept on telegraphing, you keep on screwing around, I'm going to put you on the ground. You keep on screwing around, I'm going to put you on the ground. That's exactly what he did. He sent a loud, clear message to Iran. This is what's going to happen if you continue to screw around. Now, think about the consequences this is having globally. Because you know who else is paying attention? Putin's paying attention. Putin's paying deep attention to this. China's paying attention. So, I mean, if you know, does this mean that this is going to create an action on behalf of Trump? No, but they see that he has no flinching and will use misdirection in order to make a powerful statement to the rest of the world.
Jimmy, a couple of other things I want to get to that are kind of not related to Iran, but I think are important. Number one is, you know, you left the CFO seat now 2.5 months, going on 3 months ago, and it's still vacant. And I know you're frustrated about that.
Yeah, look, I when I got appointed, we made an announcement at my family's restaurant. And the very next day, the very next stop we made, we went to Pensacola, and with Governor Scott, we make an announcement at the funding for the new Pensacola Bridge. And so, you know, I looked at the role I got to play over the last 8 years, and I got to be a part of some really significant decisions, some significant oversight and legit responsibility. So, you know, I know there's a good team over there that's working. I love them all. But, you know, what happens is morale deteriorates. You know, there's not a decision maker there that ultimately can be held accountable. And I know the president has his team. I mean, the governor has his team monitoring the situation. But, you know, come on, dude. I mean, this is a constitutional office, and you don't have it filled. So, I mean, I feel within the next week or so, you'll probably see some action. And I'm saying that with hoping, because we're in the middle of hurricane season. There's not an office that has more of a responsibility before, during, and after a hurricane than the CFO's office, whether it be urban search and rescue, insurance fraud, the claims handling process. And you really need to have that office ready to go. And which, you know, I left it in better shape than I found it, but still it needs a leader.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not like it just happened in April, of course. Governor DeSantis knew this was coming since you announced for Congress way back when. So,
yeah, he's known since December.
It, it's one of the things. It is genuinely, you know, and you know, I admire DeSantis. I like him. I support him. Although recently he's done some things I really disagree with. But appointments and reappointments and filling vacancies just seems to be one of the things he is not, his administration is not good at. A couple of bills I want to talk with you about that you are the co-sponsor on. One is particularly relevant to us and our industry. H.R. 979, the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act of 2025, would require that all cars have AM radios so that they can get the emergency announcements in here. Because, you know, in a disaster, AM radio, even though that is not our signal we advertise a lot, 1620 is there for people.
Well, and the AM radio piece of it, especially for our part of the world with hurricanes. Look, you saw it with Hurricane Michael. We saw it significantly with Hurricane Milton. When cellular service, we get so dependent on our cell phones. When those cell phones are knocked out, that probably means your internet's knocked out. So the only way you're going to get up-to-date news is having some type of a radio signal you can pick up. With Hurricane Michael, Verizon was knocked out in Northwest Florida, I think for 14 days. There was no television. Power was down about the same amount of time. And you saw it in Polk County with Hurricane Milton. So you got to have it. And, guys, we're not asking too much. We're just saying leave the AM dial alone and let it still exist so we can have it during times of disaster. It's really important.
Absolutely. I mean, it is literally the most basic form of communication that the average citizen can depend on in times of emergency. And, yeah, very important to have that
and
access to it. And it's free.
And it's
that's
free.
Right. We charge nothing.
XM for anything.
That's right.
And it's local.
Right.
So
you're also working on H.R. 7806, the American Sovereignty Restoration Act, which would continue or formalize, I guess, our withdrawal from the World Health Organization, but also the United Nations. And this is,
yeah, I mean,
go ahead, because I think this is a very interesting one. The UN has always been a problem in my mind. You know, it's on our soil, but it's really not a pro-American institution by any stretch of the imagination. Your thoughts on withdrawing from the UN and WHO permanently?
Yeah, and look, I listened to the comments the UN made after Trump's actions, and, you know, they started giving these strongly worded statements. I mean, who the hell are you people are? I mean, we send you all this money, and we're the biggest donor, and, yeah, it's great to have the UN capital in New York, but who cares? Man, go fill the building up with somebody else who wants to pay for it. But I'm just kind of the point where, you know, all these organizations need to have a reset. They need to have a rebuild. They need to have a true deep dive of what their purpose is in life. And I just don't think they do anything anymore. I've pretty much become a hawk over taxpayer dollars. I've got to pick my battles. But this is one that, you know, when I saw the legislation was out there, I said, you know what? I can agree with it. I'm going to sign on and co-sponsor it.
Last one I wanted to ask you about today, talking to Jimmy Patronis, our congressman, is the Trump tax plan, which, of course, is in negotiation between the House and the Senate. And there's a lot of disagreement between them, and we'll see where it all goes. But one element of both President Trump's agenda and what seems to be both House and Senate is an effort to cut back on wind energy credits. And generally speaking, I don't love special carve-outs for anybody. But we do have a massive wind energy plant here in the GE Vernova plant. We've got a couple of local support organizations that build the nacelles for them, the port. You know, we have definitely crafted an industry around those carve-outs or exemptions or whatever. And there's a worry that if those exemptions go away, it could dramatically affect those jobs. But this is a bill you're going to have to be asked to vote for, right?
Yeah, and in the House, we made those credits a little shorter life. We didn't create as aggressive of an expansion of the credits that was originally there. So we try to make them at least more responsible to the taxpayer. We'll ultimately see what the Senate may end up manipulating. And you get some of those that rattle off in the Senate that we should get rid of all, you know, energy credits whatsoever. But this is all taxpayers' money. I think when you're going to make any type of changes that could change the trajectory of somebody's economy or the job, you've got to create a glide path, you know, because if that wind credit's going to go away, then they've got time to be able to verify if this is going to affect their business in such a dramatic way where they're not going to be able to be profitable anymore. If they're not, then they're going to have to, you know, retool to try to do something else. But this particular legislation, the big, beautiful bill, I think what you're going to see now that the president has made this monumental decision in Iran, you're going to see the president start to roll up his sleeves. The guy's a workaholic, to start to refocus on the big, beautiful bill. It's not going to happen today. I'm sure we still got a couple weeks worth of Iran, but this is one of the reasons why I'm sure the Senate and crew has kind of kicked the can down the road that July 4th is going to be too ambitious of a day to expect this legislation to be finalized by.
Yeah, and I'm of the same opinion. Even a bad thing, if it's in place, you've got to sort of gently work it out. Abruptness is bad for the economy for everybody. Jimmy Petronis, our congressman for District 1. Jimmy, as always, thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, guys. Take care. See you.